Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
By sight with a bright flashlight to
illuminate night. Free thought, we don't want our place in the lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not fleeing from the church. So don't be spooked, we're not trying to convert. The only truth is not pulled from a text. Show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself. Break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Tim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire with lab coats. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday, I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well, then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family in all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. This is the challenge to think for yourself. Break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. Black precinct, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. We don't walk by space in a lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe.
I like that.
Pretty good.
Yeah. That's the homie Allie Kane, Williams, Father Teresa. You probably have about five more names. Yeah. That was dope, man. I like that. Well, it must be Friday, so it must be another Black Freethinkers show on a Friday night, chilling and talking with my girl Emmeline and possibly Kim and whoever else, any other of the usual suspects that stop by and give us a good conversation. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing great.
I really hope to get some really awesome callers this evening. People, don't be shy about calling in at all. We'd really love to speak with you.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I wouldn't mind a few irrational batshit callers tonight, you know what I'm saying, just to give me something just to goof off with a little bit.
You can handle those on your own. I'm not dealing with those.
Sometimes they provide a little bit of entertainment while I'm sitting over there like, the hell is he talking about?
Our discussion tonight is Irrational Beliefs Part 2. So I think we might be getting some of those callers if you're lucky. Because there's always going to be that person that doesn't think their belief is irrational at all.
Right. And it's not just Christianity. There's a lot of, mindsets and stuff like that, Generally, conversations that we have kind of like a free-flowing, not really structured, just almost as though we're sitting around chatting and talking, just kicking and whatnot. So, it might touch on a few things. It might touch on a lot more things than you thought you were thinking about. Hopefully we cover something that you actually were thinking about. And if we don't, well, I didn't have anything planned to say after that, so I probably shouldn't have said that. Anyway, so...
It is February today, officially. So the rational belief that was on my mind, because it's February, and because I am a former Catholic, is the whole issue of Lent. For those of you who don't know what Lent is, it is the 40 days before Easter Sunday. And one of the things that the Catholic Church would do during Lent is something called Stations of the Cross. And they did Stations of the Cross on Fridays during Lent. And on Good Friday, the Friday before Easter, which was good, well, not so good for Jesus, I guess, but they call it Good Friday, they would do something called Living Stations of the Cross, where they would have actual people act out the roles of Jesus, Simon of Cyrene, Mary Magdalene, Mary Mother of God, etc. And there are still countries all over the world that do Living Stations of the Cross everywhere from the Philippines to Peru, etc., where they will actually, the person who has the honor, and I use that in quotes, honor, of playing Jesus, will actually be nailed to the cross in some places. They make a whole event out of it. Like, he's dragging an actual heavy cross. It's actually really hot. This person might suffer sunstroke and dehydration. And, you know, people have died in certain cases.
That's pretty messed up. I remember having to go to church and see the, they had these teenage boys reenact the Passion of the Christ and everything on stage. And I can't figure a more fitting way to raise a child than to symbolically torture and nail a man to a cross.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you want to not prevent them from watching R-rated movies, but, symbolizing
really
torture of a grown man, okay?
I'm really glad you brought that up because it reminds me of something I've been thinking about for on and off for a few years now, where I feel like there is a hypocrisy, especially in American culture, about saying we don't want violence, we don't want violence, but especially the Christian groups here associate grotesque violence in the form of Jesus's suffering and death with the purest love. And I don't understand that. I don't understand, too, a God that wants desperately to forgive you and can't just forgive you without all of the grotesque violence and bloodshed. I don't understand it. And I don't understand a culture where people see nudity as wrong, but they don't see abject violence as wrong, even though they glorify it on a daily basis. When they talk about Jesus' suffering and death, etc. The sacrifice aside, why does anyone need to suffer in order for God to do something? Well, there shouldn't be conditions or limitations on what God can do and how he can do it. If he wants to forgive us, he can just forgive us.
Well, see, that's because that would make sense, The way I look at that is, you're a game developer and you design a game, but I designed Super Mario. Super Mario operates under the parameters that I created, the rules that I created. Everything that operates Mario's world was created by me. But for some reason, there's a glitch in the game. So I go and have a baby by a random girl who lives across the street. That dude grows up, I have him killed in order to rectify whatever problems I have in my game system. Think about that, all right? So, that right there in itself kind of puts you into a mindset of, well, why not just redesign
the damn
game?
Actually, your analogy would be more accurate if it was you somehow transposed yourself into your own game, slept with one of the characters in the game, then went out of the game, and that character had a baby within the game. And when that person was killed at whatever level in the game, then the game would be fixed. So you had the power to go into your own system and knock somebody up, but you didn't have the power to fix the initial problem in the first place.
Or you could do that. So whenever we get into all this kind of stuff and everything like that, I often find myself really thinking about the fact that the world over really holds to these beliefs. I mean, Christianity is one of the big three religions. I can't say it's any worse, than Islam or whatever, because, you know, Islam has some serious issues going on as well. You know what I'm saying? You know, if Christians want to talk about Islam, talking about how, you know, like a girl can be beaten to death for being raped, well, you know, a few hundred years ago, you could be burned alive at the stake for not agreeing with the way that the main people are worshiping God. You know, so if you're a Lutheran, you could probably get burned at the stake, or a Protestant, you could probably burn at the stake. You know, get called a heretic, burn at the stake. You know,
yeah, it was kind of one of those things where as soon as one person said something along the lines of you being a witch, a heretic, having a pact with the devil, that they pretty much put that last nail in your coffin. It was done for you. It was over. Just having disagreements with church leaders in a lot of parts of the world is enough to get you socially shunned. It's still a huge issue. One of the most recent examples I can think of is what happened at Bishop Eddie Long's church, New Birth Baptist, when those teenage boys came out and said that he had inappropriate relationships with them, and, you know, all that was exposed. They were shunned because no one in the church even wanted to listen. And there were some that said, there are the very few that said that it is a possibility that those things happen, still held on to the idea that he shouldn't be penalized and he should be forgiven as a man of God for these inappropriate and illegal actions. And this is the kind of thing that makes you think about, you know, the kind of power that religion must have had. If it has this much power now, imagine how much power religion had in the world before media, especially before social media, before there were people to film things, you know, before we had devices that could capture entire conversations, like text conversations, before we had computers that could just pull up IMs and private messages. It was a matter of your word against mine. And if you're the man of God, it doesn't matter who I am, because your word will always mean more than mine. And this is where we get into the Salem witch hunts, and where we get into various religions in various parts of the world, where a person can be incarcerated or killed for apostasy, for being a heretic, and for speaking out against their religion, or even questioning their religion or a religious official. And, I mean, if we have this much power now, if religion has this much power now, just imagine how much power it had before.
Man,
and
I'm telling you, when that whole thing first broke, man, I'm getting into all kinds of trouble, because, you know, it's amazing how if you remove Bishop from the front of that name, and his name is just Eddie Long, some schmo that lives down the street,
Eddie Long cable
shit,
guy,
he drives a shitty truck to work every day. You say that this guy might have, well, in my terminology, I use molested, because he waited until after the threshold of the age of consent, even though he started putting this stuff into work before that.
Yeah, he was grooming
these
boys before that.
Yeah, so if it had been just regular Eddie Long, not a bishop, this guy would be nearly tarred and feathered and crucified on his own street. But because it's Eddie Long and because of who he is, well, you know, not only there's a possibility that the four boys are lying, but they seduce him. Everybody makes mistakes. Nobody is perfect, and he can be forgiven. Never mind the fact that these are the same people who champion marriage and fidelity, and the fact that he himself was anti-gay and marched against anti-gay causes. And now here it is, he's in hot water with four people, and no, it's okay. Even Creflo Dollar called it a wreck. That's a hell of a wreck.
Well, yeah,
I don't know about
Creflo Dollar,
but I've
actually
never accidentally fallen into four asses before.
Well, Creflo Dollar actually not only spoke up for Eddie Long, but he also reprimanded all of the congregants who left New Birth Baptist and pretty much ordered them back to their shepherd, back to their home at New Birth Baptist, saying that the fact that they had left the congregation was wrong, not the fact that he had seduced and had inappropriate relations with underage young men, you know, first of all, not only is that illegal, but from the Bible's perspective, immoral, but the fact that these people were leaving, that's what was wrong. And you bring up an interesting point about, you know, what if he was Eddie Long from down the street? The sad part is this probably would have never happened if he were Eddie Long from down the street, because the sheer amount of money he spent grooming these boys, everything from paying tuition to buying cars and trips, simply would not have been possible if he had not been making the sort of money he makes as the leader of a megachurch.
Right.
And the very fact that these people will sit here and defend him when he was basically using their ties to woo underage lovers speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, and that's ultimately what it leads to. And to me, I even said this to someone, I'm like, you're not worse. Even I'm an atheist. I don't believe in a Jesus or a God. But it seems to me that you're more worse than the man than you are worse than your own deity. Because if you're worse, if you're truly worse than Jesus, you don't need this asshole anyway. And if he's really doing this stuff, you don't have a problem calling it out. But because you're worse than him and Jesus, you know what I'm saying? Or you may even be worse than him more than Jesus. You may even be worse than him in conjunction with Jesus. Somehow or another, you put this dude in a position to where he's infallible and can be excused from the normal things that you would condemn other people for. You know what I'm saying? And so that got me into a lot of trouble, man. A lot of people unfriended me, but, you know, it's like, am I really going to lose sleep over that?
Yeah, you know, you really, there's really a time, especially as if you are someone like me who is a former believer, where you are going to have to reevaluate some friendships you have with people. Luckily, most of the friendships that I had were not based on religion. I was not the sort of person that spoke about religion outside of church and church functions, never tried to convert anyone. And actually, one of my best friends for the last 11 years is an atheist, has been an atheist most of his life, was an atheist at the time I met him. And so it was never an issue like that for me. But one of the things that I noticed was there are these same Christians that are the very first in line to attack your everyday citizen, often without any real evidence, just on the strength of an accusation, will be the first in line to vehemently, you know, defend a quote-unquote man of God despite overwhelming evidence.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, they could have had a sex tape in the real case. I mean, they gave R. Kelly a pass and you know, he had a tape, but he was talented and rich, and apparently being able to croon gives you a pass. I can only imagine the sort of pass Eddie Long would have given and the sort of mental gymnastics some of his defenders would have had to play to keep on siding with him and defending his actions.
That wasn't R. Kelly, though. According to him, that dude looked exactly like R. Kelly. He's in the video, face up. That looked like R. Kelly, but that wasn't R. Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they did that. I guess just a guy that looked exactly like him or something.
And the truth is, had it been Eddie Long, they would have said the same thing. That looks like Bishop, but that's not Bishop. I know him. He would never do such a thing. We had a similar issue at my old church. Luckily, I didn't have to go to a church that had any, like, financial or sex abuse scandals by the priest. But we did have a scandal concerning one of the congregants who was had been abusing his daughter for years. And this guy was a member of the church's men's club, and he was a volunteer coach for the girls' soccer team, and he was a volunteer troop leader for the Boy Scout troop. And these people, who knew him, also knew his daughter. She had been raised in the church from infancy. You know, as soon as they heard these things, this girl, who many of them had formerly considered like a daughter, they turned their backs on her. They called her all kinds of whore, slut, liar. And, you know, this is a girl who at the time was only 16 years old. And these people, despite the evidence, were saying that she was making up this enormous lie against her father. And even later on, when he got arrested, they still, you know, insisted that she had been lying, that he was a good man and would never do these things. I can only imagine how much stronger their defenses would have been if it had been one of the priests at our church.
You know, oh, that reminds me of something. Check. All right, now, this has gone viral by now, so I'm pretty sure it's not new information. But the incident with the pastor who wrote, apparently, I think it was her and a group of other people, and went to an Applebee's. They got their meal, they ate, they sat down, server did her job. And rather than give her a tip, she writes on the receipt, "I give God 10%. Why should I give you 18?" Or something to that effect.
Yes, I remember. I saw that actually a couple of days ago, and you know, at first my immediate reaction was, "What a bitch!" You know, but then I had to really stop and think about it. Besides the fact that this woman is obviously very self-centered and very selfish, and is either ignorant or inconsiderate of how the service industry works, this woman is also a pastor. And at the end of the day, the Bible teaches you to put God and what God wants from you, from the world at large, above everyone else's wants and needs, not just your own, but also the waitress who's serving your food. So with that in mind, if you not only believe, but believe to the extent that you will base a career around telling everyone that God is the most important, God is the most high, God is the most deserving, then why wouldn't you have that mentality that no matter how hard a person works, she doesn't deserve more than your God? I'm not saying all religious people have this mentality. I'm just saying this mentality is a byproduct of this way of thinking. And the fact of the matter is, moderate Christians and moderate fill-in-the-blank theists never want to admit it, but their scripture and their doctrines are fodder for this sort of irrational, sometimes insane, ways of thinking.
Now, see, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Although, you know, I'm still saying it's, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm still saying it's pretty fucked up. I mean, you know what I'm saying, somebody's working for peanuts, and, you know what I'm saying, you put an immortal being over the person that's serving your food, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I really find that to be, you know, not only, you see, you're a pastor, and everybody wants people to believe that the church is a good place, that they help out the community, they do this, they do that, and everything like that, you have an opportunity to show that. Even mm-hmm. if that's not your intention while eating a meal, if you are going to brag about your title as a pastor, that means you're representing not only your church and yourself and your faith, but you also representing any ideals associated with those around you who share similar beliefs and or your God. So, by writing on there that you give God 10%, why should I give you 18? And then putting pastor as though that clarifies the entire situation, that takes a monumental amount of bitchiness right there. You know what I'm saying?
I completely agree with you. And I'm not saying, I'm not defending her actions at all. What I'm trying to allude to is the fact that this is the cornerstone of Christianity. You know, love your neighbor as yourself, and love God more than yourself. Yes, you can't tangibly experience him, but he is still more important than you and everyone around you. And her putting pastor on that check was a real clarification. I mean, it's not something that I condone again, but if you believe to that extent where you're going to make this your career, then, yeah, it makes perfect sense that a person who could write something so asinine would be someone following a belief so asinine.
Right. You know, you know, and I mean, that really brings it into, you know what I'm saying, what we're, you know, a lot of the things that we deal with when it comes to belief and stuff like that, is that you run into some people who really and truly do wholeheartedly believe that their religion is good, that their religion really teaches some type of value or love thy neighbor, love, you know what I'm saying, type of ideals and whatnot. And then you see some people who believe their religion gives them a license to be complete dicks just because they feel like they're better than you. You know what I'm saying? Never mind the fact that that server, for all she know, was probably a person in her congregation. She probably just didn't even know the chick. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you never know. And then, you know, who's to say how long that she's been doing this stuff and feeling like she's vindicated by doing so?
Absolutely. The only thing that really bothers me about what she did, other than, of course, the waitress who lives on these tips, is the fact that she's saying, I give God 10%. Now, I don't know how the tithing system works when you are the one on the pulpit asking for tithes, and I think she knows that everyone around her knows that she lives off these tithes, which are really just tips for God.
So
when you say, I give God 18%, first of all, where are you tithing to? You have a church. It's the church that you are the pastor at. Do you put 10% of the tithes you got from last week in the basket? Like, how does that work? How do you tithe specifically? And secondly, she knows that the tithes of all of her congregants go to her bank account. I mean, you know, church maintenance aside, those tithes are what she lives on. You live on tips for Jesus. So this is really, it was the hypocrisy of it that really bothered me more than what she said.
Yep, that's about the size of it, you know. And, you know, I'll see people really, like, you know, and that really brings me, you know, even though Christianity is pretty much, is by far not the most, not the only irrational belief. You know what I'm saying? I mean, some of these ideas I had probably wouldn't count as religions. But the fact that, you know, it is such a prolific and massive institution, you got these ideas running around millions of people, and not everybody's going to agree with everybody. A lot of people are truly going to believe that they are doing the right thing by not doing shit other than saying, I'm going to pray for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They really do believe that a being is going to stop whatever he's doing to help this other person. You know what I'm saying? Never mind the fact that you could probably help out yourself. You could probably donate some time yourself. You could probably donate some money yourself. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you have this belief. This belief is that there is a being who is watching over everything we do, and if I ask him to, he will help this person out, because obviously he's not paying attention enough to one of his own creations and know this person needs help. Nobody needs to call me. I'm going to drop down there on them myself. Mm-hmm. Now, so I even have trouble getting around the idea that God needs money to begin with. Like, what the hell are you buying?
I don't understand the tithing system either. And this was one of the reasons why very, very early on in my childhood, there were a lot of inconsistencies of my religion. My eventual state of atheism, or journey back to atheism, was not a huge step, but many, many small steps. And one of those many, many small steps was knowing from the start that God is omnipotent, and the fact that Jesus, God incarnate, the Messiah of the Bible, also insists that you tie to God only showed to me that he might very well be a charlatan, you know, because if he were truly the Messiah, he would tell people, hey, God doesn't need this, really, because my father has everything. He has all the kingdoms of the world. He has all the power. Stop giving these people your money. But he didn't say that. And so that was kind of like one of the many seeds of doubt that I swallowed over the years. One of the things that bothered me as well were, a lot of people don't know this passage in the Bible, but there was a biblical story where Jesus is speaking to this woman. She's from another tribe or another city, what have you. She is begging for her daughter, and Jesus is basically standing there with his disciples, like, mocking her. And he says his parable saying, well, even the dog gets scraps from the master's table. And this is, like, one of the few instances where Jesus displayed his douchebaggery. But it's like, really? What God would say something like this? You know, it's one of those times where you see the facade of this kind teacher fall away, and you see the real arrogant, egocentric person that he really is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I remember something like that, because it later was pretty much begging him or something like that, and he pretty much acted like a complete dick about it, man. You
yeah,
know,
he's basically laughing at her with his little squad, his disciples. And then he likens her to a dog. And you're sitting there thinking, really? And then, you know, you have other moments where, I mean, people say Jesus loves you, Jesus loves you. Jesus never once said that in the Bible, first of all. He said for us to love one another, and that he was the only way to the Father. He never said he loved us. In fact, what he did say was, I did not come to bring peace, but I came to bring war. I came to turn father against son, mother against daughter, husband against wife. I did not come to bring unity, but division. Someone says something like that, how can you call them a good person?
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, whether or not he is God or not, that's exactly what Christianity did. It is one of the many religions that have helped to divide humanity.
You know, I grew up as my grandmother's a Jehovah's Witness, and so I grew up learning a lot of that stuff. And growing up, when somebody's telling you all of these things, and they're telling you that this is the way things are and everything, you turn a blind eye to every other person and every other religion saying, no, this is the way things are. And so you grow up learning this stuff, believing, you know what I'm saying, that this, you know, this right here, this religion right here, this one has it right. This is the one that is just telling me, hey, yeah, Jesus didn't die on a cross. He died on a torture stake, a single beam of wood. You know what I'm saying? You grow up, you know, you grow up kind of believing that, you know, you're not a part of this world. You know what I'm saying? You're helping people to survive this world so they can live a good life and go to some paradise, earth, or whatever, and live forever. You know what I'm saying? You don't think about, well, what the hell would you do in a paradise? Or you look at the illustrations in this book and happy-go-lucky families eating grapes while a tiger is walking nearby. You know what I'm saying? You don't think about that. It wasn't until, you know, I started reading science and I'm reading stuff about, you know, I'm looking at the picture and I'm like, well, a tiger is built a certain way because that tiger is built for not only chasing food but grabbing food and eating meat. That's the reason it's built the way it is. That's evolution. You know what I'm saying? So, you know what I'm saying? Why am I supposed to believe a tiger would be in a paradise earth chilling beside humans as they're eating grapes? What is he eating?
Well, this is the issue, you know, with religion and the way it exploits people. And most people don't understand this. Theists don't understand it of theists of other religions. Oftentimes, atheists are guilty of not understanding it either. But evolution teaches us to emulate our parents or our caregivers in order to survive. and religion exploits our evolutionary instinct to believe whatever our caregivers tell us for our own good. And this is why when people convert from one religion to another, it can be so traumatic, because they have to reevaluate their parents as people, and they have to reevaluate what they felt was true. It's also the same when a person comes out as an atheist, or even comes out as a homosexual or a bisexual. Especially if they came from a household that was intolerant of these things, you are claiming to be someone, or to have a new set of beliefs, or to have no beliefs, when you've been told all your life that being that way, or people of that religion, or people who have no religion are wrong. Actually thinking for yourself and making conscious decisions for yourself, you know, serious decisions apart from what you were raised to believe was right and wrong, can be very traumatizing, because you're pretty much on your own. Any mistakes you make, you can't look to someone else and say, well, they told me. It's on you. It's on your shoulders. And sometimes it's nice to have a scapegoat. It's nice to be in a family where everyone thinks like you and behaves like you, because when you grieve, they can empathize with that. When you make mistakes, they can empathize with that. When you decide to strike on your own and do something, behave in a way, take on a belief or renounce belief contrary to what you've been told all your life, you are alienated in a sense.
Yeah.
It's easy to believe that the religion that you were born in is the right one, because your parents can't be wrong. Your family can't be wrong. All those other people are wrong. And this is my, there's an atheist who goes by the name of Dark Matter 2525. He makes YouTube videos. And he did a video called The Real God in Epiphany. It's my favorite atheist video of all time. He makes tons of interesting points. But one of them is that because your God is intangible, people's relationship with God is really a relationship with their ego. And this is why your God will so often have the same views as you, like what you like, dislike what you dislike, and why oftentimes theists of the same religious denomination, sometimes even of the same church, will disagree with each other but say that they agree with God. Because really, this God is real in the sense that he is them.
Yeah, I really don't, I find it hilarious that the God is supposed to save you from whatever calamity is supposed to befit your life or whatever, is the same God who got himself killed, though. I'm reading about, you know, like the Canaanite woman. I think you and I were just talking about this, where the woman is asking for help for her demon-possessed daughter or whatever. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know how you diagnose a demon-possessed person, but, you know, apparently she knew for a fact that her daughter was demon-possessed. And
schizophrenia was considered demon possession back then. Actually, in some parts of the world, it still is considered demon possession. Like in Haiti, you know, that's what it is for people. There's no such thing as schizophrenia. You are acting that way, you're behaving that way, you're hearing voices, you have multiple personalities, you are possessed.
Yeah. So the woman apparently believes her daughter is demon-possessed. Asking Jesus for help, Jesus doesn't say a word, and so his disciples like send her away, for she keeps crying out after us. He answered, "I was only sent to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him, "Lord, help me." He replied, "It's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." And mm-hmm. she was like, "Yes, it is, Lord. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table." So then mm-hmm. Jesus said, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted," and your daughter was healed. And her daughter was healed at that moment. Now,
what I love about that story too is Jesus mm-hmm. specifically says he came for the children of Israel. So I don't understand why anyone but a Messianic Jew would be worshiping Jesus.
That's another point. know what I'm saying? That's another good point. And I'm laughing at the hilarity of the fact that, you know, somebody needs help. You know, well, I'm busy right now. Let's see what she got to say about it. And she pretty much has to beg this dude to help her and everything. And then after she kissed his ass, her daughter was healed at that moment. This guy instantaneously healed a woman. He was not even near at the time. Flash forward a few years, this guy's getting nailed to a cross because there's nothing he can do about that. Because
well, here's
that
the thing
was
that
the whole
a lot
plan.
Of, here's the thing that a lot of atheists overlook. A lot of theists overlook it, too. As far as Jesus is concerned, there was no sacrifice. All there was Yahweh, again, showing, you know, determined to put on the bloodiest show possible. Jesus knew long beforehand that he would be betrayed, crucified, and killed. So he did not get himself killed. He allowed himself to be killed because having prior knowledge of something gives you a way to prevent it. He also knew who the traitor would be, even. So he allowed these things to happen to himself. And then later on, like he didn't already know, he's whining on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? But once again, he already knew. He also knew far in advance that he would be resurrected and ascend into heaven to be master of the fucking universe 3 days after his death. So if you already know these things, how much of a sacrifice is it? Because I could easily say that I would die for someone that I love. I would die to save someone's child. I would die for someone that I felt had more to offer to the world than I did. Maybe someone who had the cure for cancer or the cure for AIDS in their mind, you know? But am I sacrificing myself for that individual if I also know that I won't remain dead?
No, see, and that's the thing. First
sacrifice
of all,
implies that you're losing something.
Right. Now, let's assume that Jesus was a completely separate person from God. Any plan that involves you either allowing or getting yourself tortured and beaten and nailed to a cross is a bad plan. If you are the same person as God, any plan that involves you impregnate a young woman against her will and waiting 30 years to capitalize upon that entire plan, which still involves being beaten, tortured, and nailed to a cross, is still a bad plan. That is the worst plan that you could have ever come up with. Why was that even considered? And I'm supposed to be following you.
One of the biggest flaws in the whole Jesus story is the one that's not even in the Jesus story, and that's what the hell happened to Jesus between ages 9 and 29. We're with Jesus up until he's 9 years old when he's calling out all the philosophers and the doctors and all the other intelligent people, and we're back with Jesus again when he's 29 years old, 4 years before his crucifixion, when he dies at age 33. What happened in that 20-year gap that's missing from his life? What did he do? Did he use his powers to, like, bully other children? You know, it's one of those things where the fact that these 2 decades of his life are just removed, you know, just tells you 2 things. Either they were less than savory, less than holy, less than inspired, or everything before and after those 20 years and the gap itself was non-existent, a complete farce.
that would be the true Hollywood story of Jesus or something like that.
Did he go to the well every day, like turn that well water into wine and like get drunk, like frat boy wasted, you know, and bumbling around Jerusalem? Is that why nobody took him seriously? Like, you know, you have to consider things like that, you know. What was he doing with his life before he was 29 years old? Because if you're truly there to help, you're truly sent on a mission from God, you should have been doing that every single day of your life. And while, you know, he goes on and on to say when the people of Jerusalem mock him, oh, well, prophets are never accepted from their hometown, he was accepted by his superiors as a child. So what exactly do these people in his hometown know about him that we don't know, that they choose to shun him and his claims of being a Messiah?
What the hell happened to his parents after that whole miraculous birth? Because I don't remember him being mentioned very much after that.
We don't know what happens with Mary either after she finds him speaking with the scholars until she's there after he's been crucified again, crying, you know, mourning for her son. And, you know, they went to that wedding together, the wedding where they turned water into wine. But he addressed her very rudely as woman instead of mother. Joseph, I guess his whole role in this story was to save Mary's virtue or her reputation and not make her look like a whore who got knocked up by someone else. Because we don't even know what's going on with him after Jesus age 9. It's like he ceased to exist.
What happened to Joseph?
Joseph was like the much abused, stepfather that, you know, kind of had a cameo on the story, but he wasn't the star of the show.
Yeah, it just seemed like, you know, okay, none of you are important anymore. It's all about this guy now, you know, let's just forget all that.
Let's imagine that Mary did have relations with someone other than Joseph. She got him drunk, had that man come to him in the form of an angel and tell him, Mary is not lying, it really is God's child. And he thought he had that dream where an angel of God told him that the child she was expecting was God's child, and that's why he believed it, because he was completely drunk. And she and Joseph told Jesus every day of his life that you are God's son, and it is your destiny to be the Messiah. And being a mentally unbalanced person, he believed it.
Mm. Now, you know, now we really do kind of get on the Christianity a lot, man. I mean, you know, and I can't help it. Christianity is the dominant belief that is around my neighborhood and around everybody I know. I've known other people of other religions, but primarily and there are like 43,000 different denominations of Christianity. So 9 times out of 10, that's going to be the religion I'm going to be lampooning the most, because that's the one I've been exposed to the most. And
I can't help it
because when you read the Bible, it's like Stephen King, blind and coked out his mind on acid, writing a book after, I don't know, a brain hemorrhage or something. It makes absolutely no sense. And if you make any attempt to make this coherent at all, you also got to realize there's a lot of it that's not going to make any sense. It's going to invalidate everything that you just thought made sense. And that's where we get into the comedy.
Well, besides Christianity, I mean, there's a lot of irrationality in Islam and in Judaism. A Facebook friend actually sent me links about parts of the scripture in the Talmud. These are just some of the gems that are in there. The Jews are called human beings, but the non-Jews are not humans. They are beasts. A pregnant non-Jew is no better than a pregnant animal. The souls of non-Jews come from impure spirits and are called pigs. If you eat with a Gentile, it is the same as eating with a dog. Sexual intercourse between Gentiles is like intercourse between animals. If a Jew has a non-Jewish servant or maid who dies, one should not express sympathy to the Jew. You should tell the Jew, God will replace your loss, just as if one of his oxen or asses had died. This is other gems. Let me see. There's one in particular that I thought was pretty good. The Jewish nation is the only nation selected by God, while all the remaining ones are contemptible and hateful.
Mm-hmm.
If a goy, this is a non-Jew, killed a goy or a Jew, he is responsible. But if a Jew killed a goy, he is responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just let that marinate for a little bit. Let's see here. This one was one that was pretty shocking. A heretic Gentile you may kill outright with your own hands. Every Jew who spills the blood of the godless is doing the same as making a sacrifice to God. So, you know, when you hear these things, and there are scriptures just as violent in the Quran, and everyone wants to go on and on all day. Well, the Quran says kill infidels everywhere you may see them. The Quran says infidels are heathens. It says that the Jews are dogs. Have you read what the Talmud says? All the Quran does is plagiarize, pretty much, in my opinion, because this isn't any better. Listen to this. All of the non-Jew has the same body structure as a Jew. They compare with the Jew like a monkey to a human. Does this remind you of something Adolf Hitler said back in Nazi Germany?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jews are animals. They're not people. They look like us, but they're not like us, you know? The Jew is the abominable bastard child of the European and the African. The African is like a monkey. These are all things that the Nazis said. These are things that fanatical Muslims say about Jews and non-Muslims. Let's not pretend that any one of these religions has scriptures where one is more decent, more tolerable of others outside of their faith or outside of their ethnicity as the other. Let's not pretend that one is better than the other. We might have some people within those groups who don't think that way or who don't put their thoughts to action, even though they do think that way, but let's not pretend that one is superior to the other. It really bothers me a lot that even among the atheist community, people go in all day long about how horrible Christianity is and how horrible Islam is, and no one has anything to say about Orthodox Judaism. This is what we have. This is what is written in the scripture. And don't tell me that this has absolutely no effect on every single Jewish person walking the face of the earth right now. It's like, let's not lie to ourselves.
Well, see, you know, I find it kind of, you know, a humorous thing that if I'm Islamic or I'm one of the, you know, not one of the asshole Jews you were talking about, and or whatever, if I'm any one of the moderate to liberal type end of the big three religions and whatnot, how can I really feel good about worshiping a religion that also has the extremists who also feel like they're worshiping God as well? As a matter of fact, they feel like they're worshiping God so well that I'm actually not worshiping God enough. Mm-hmm. You find the same thing in Christianity when you have, especially during the Middle Ages and stuff like that. You know, like, there are some people who believe that you are not worshiping God enough. You're not doing enough to worship God. Maybe that might even include some stuff that God probably wouldn't, well, I mean, I was about to say God wouldn't do, but God would kill a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, like when you think, when you're looking at the Nation of Islam, and you see all these brothers right here thinking that, yeah, we're worse than Allah. And then you see these guys over here in the Middle East who not only wholeheartedly believe they're worse than Allah, they believe these guys are not worse than Allah. And some of these guys are willing to prove it by going into a building with a bomb strapped in their chest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know what I'm saying? So how can you say that those guys are worshiping Allah wrong? We're worshiping Allah right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing with Christianity. I mean, any type, it seems like every religion has their different factions within the religion, and all those people believe that I'm doing this the right way.
This is the way somebody told me. Because when you have any more than one person, you're going to have different points of view. And when you have a deity that won't show up to say they're right, you're wrong.
Exactly.
Then I can just claim that God is talking to me. You know, and let's say in current events, for example, you have, and we're just talking about, you know, the feeling of superiority and the superiority in these religions. Israel just admitted that they were against the will of these women. They were giving the female Ethiopian immigrants birth control, Depo-Provera, which is actually a very dangerous form of birth control. And although it's only temporary, you know, you don't have that right to control someone else's reproduction like that. And this is one of the things I was talking about earlier with a friend, where you have a group of people that went through something as traumatic as a Holocaust and will turn around and do something like this to another person. But why would they do this? Because the scripture gives them leniency. You have verses like this. Jehovah created the non-Jew in human form so that the Jew would not have to be served by beasts. The non-Jew is consequently an animal in human form and condemned to serve the Jew day and night. You know, when you have scripture, millennia-old scripture that says something like this, then you can easily turn around, look at yourself in the mirror and say, well, what Hitler did was wrong, but he was a man acting with his own anger and his own hatred, and obviously not inspired by God, because God is on our side, and he told us in our scripture that we are the superior beings, which means that what he did was wrong, but if we do something similar, it's not as wrong, because after all, we're chosen. And this is what happens across the board in Abrahamic religions, where everybody feels they're right, and anything that they do to prove that they are right is right in God's eyes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how you get the idea that, well, this guy isn't worshiping God enough or the right way, so let's burn him alive at the stake. You know, that's cool. You know, he wasn't doing it right, you know. And that's why, that's why you end up seeing a lot of these other factions of beliefs pop up. Some of them may be considered religion. Some of them may not. I don't really research them enough to find out because I don't really feel like it really matters. The only time I really encounter some of these people is when I'm on Facebook and I happen to run across somebody who believes in this wholeheartedly enough to tell me that there's something called Black Supreme Mathematics. And, yeah, it's totally viable. It makes sense and it works. I can prove it, you know, by doing a few equations. I'm like, well, let me see you build a building using your own form of mathematics that apparently somebody made up out of their ass, if you ask me.
Hold on, they have new math now? Okay, we're taking it too far. Like, I'm a huge math nerd. Like, you don't mess with math, period.
Uh-huh.
Once you start messing with math, you've taken it too far. And this is actually one of the things that I use in the arguments that I have with theists on occasion is, They're always saying, well, man isn't perfect. That's why we misunderstand his word. Well, I'm like, God has failed to do something that math teachers around the world haven't failed to do. Addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, algebra, calculus, trigonometry, statistics, those are the same worldwide. When I first came to the United States, math was the only subject that I could do because it was the only subject that had not changed, that wasn't dependent on language. So if every teacher in the world, not even teachers, I mean, I learned how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, you know, before I was 5 years old from my uncles, you know, if even people who don't even have a teaching degree can teach something so basic and have it stick in everyone's head, you know, everyone that is capable of learning anyway, and we're all in agreement worldwide that 2 + 2 equals 4, why is there such a disagreement on who is God, what is God, and how should we worship him?
You know, I don't even know. I've never been very religious, so, I mean, I believe, but I've never been very, very religious. But I guess I never really found myself really adhering towards anything hard enough to really be like, yeah, I count myself as this. So consequently, you know, I wasn't really feeling Christianity, and I guess I remember going to this place in Stone Mountain, Georgia, and there were some brothers there, and they were wearing these black garbs with these, you know, kind of intricate little designs on them and everything like that. And I remember sitting in there listening to these people talk and everything, and they preaching all what I termed as knowledge at the time. And, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, okay, so what are y'all in? What does it do? I'm like, well, you got to come back to find out about that. And I'm like, well, you can't tell me now? Like, well, you can only tell, you know, pretty much he didn't want to tell me what they are and what they do, which totally talked me out of finding out any more about it, because I'm like, you're not a fucking covert government operation, man. You're just a bunch of dudes up here talking stuff, you know, saying pretty much about America and white people and stuff like that. I kind of found out, I think, they were black nationalists and the Wadmi was one or the other. And I think something had to do with somebody coming from space and spaceship and all that kind of stuff right there. And so that was the first time I ever encountered those people. The second time I encountered those people, when I saw a group of brothers in Atlanta dressed as samurai. There's nothing more hilarious than there not being a Dragon Con or comic convention at the time, and there are a group of black guys dressed as samurai standing on the corner talking shit about America and white people using the Bible.
Oh, poor things. The thing about it is, and I believe we covered this in the Irrational Beliefs Part 1, was how diaspora who are in the Americas and in the Caribbean wouldn't have come to Christianity without slavery. So when you use the same scripture that was used to enslave you and with the idea that it's going to free you is ironic to me.
Right.
I mean, I remember when I was going through my crisis of faith, you know, I was ready to give up on Catholicism and Christianity in general, but I wasn't really ready to give up on the idea of God or a religion, probably because I had, you know, a really good religious community. I got along with most members of my church very well. There were never any issues with the priest. I was in a lot of different groups there, and I volunteered a lot for the church, and I guess I didn't want to let go of that feeling of community. And I remember, even as a Catholic, from a very early age, probably when I was 9 and I was told that I couldn't be a priest because I'm a woman, I had a real loathing for the convent. Later on, when I was about 19, I read a book called Double Cross, and it talked about the way nuns in the United States and across the Americas are treated and how it's really no more than a form of voluntary indentured servitude, almost slavery. And because of that, it really turned me off to Nation of Islam and Islam in general. I guess the feminist in me wouldn't allow me to get any sort of sense of modesty and righteousness from having to cover myself, being told that my appearance was causing someone to sin. So I could never get behind that, really. I remember talking to a nun that I was friends with, Sister Jean Bouchard. She is almost in her 80s, I believe. But she joined the Sisters of St. Joseph in Michigan when she was 16 years old. And she told me this horrible, horrible story that really, like shook me. She joined the convent when she was 16. And a few years later, there was a new priest at her church. And this was around the time when girls were still using, like, you know, bits of rags and, you know, fabric rags to curl their hair. You know, sleeping the rags at night, and you wake up and you have curls in the morning. And all the girls were doing this. And he didn't like it. He said it was vanity. So he had all the brass door handles replaced with wooden ones. They already didn't have mirrors. And the Sisters of St. Joseph, you aren't allowed any possessions either. Like, nothing belongs to you. Everything belongs to the house or to God. You don't have anything that's yours. And the girls were still curling their hair, though. So one day he was pissed off, and it was late fall, early winter, and there was a lake nearby, and it was about half an hour before Mass, and he had all the young nuns march over to this lake, dunk their hair in the water, and go into Mass this way with their hair dripping wet, freezing cold. And what happened was one of the nuns ended up catching pneumonia and dying. What makes the story worse is the irony of the fact that she was the only one with naturally curly hair. So once I heard this, and I heard the fact, and then I heard the even more traumatizing way, for me anyway, that she went on to put, you know, the blame on this man, rightfully so, but also say that, you know, he must not have been a real Christian and never once considered why God would let something happen to someone so pious and good who had done nothing wrong other than devote her life to the church. And I heard her rationalizations for why this poor girl had to die the way that she did. I really understood. Like, that's the first time where the term religious brainwashing started to make sense to me. And that was another one of those like stepping stones toward the beginning of the end of my relationship with God, of me finally coming to the conclusion that there was no God, because I could not believe that a being of so much power would allow something like that to happen, and that she would have had to go through all these mental gymnastics to come to a place of peace with what had happened to this her fellow nun. And when I saw the women of Islam covered the way they were, and covered only in Islamic countries, because I don't see Muslim women in America wearing burqas covered from head to toe.
That was a hell of a story.
Yeah. So when I see things like that, and they say it's for modesty, it's for piety, all I see is either forced or self-imposed subjugation.
Yeah, that's a hell of a story. That's a hell of a story right there. I even see, you know, the ideals of, you know what I'm saying, of masculinity and femininity controlled, you know, taken, you know, outside of all that. You know, controlled, and even these pseudo factions that split off and form their own little I guess society or what have you, and stuff like that. I mean, if you really want to believe, if you believe the inherent superiority of masculinity, you know what I'm saying, if that's what you want to believe, okay, cool. I can't get with you on that. But, you know what I'm saying, if you are such a douchebag that you need a woman to pretty much wear a sheet to keep you from being turned on by her, then to me that shows that you're not all the man that you think you are, because you can't help yourself. You're thinking in your mind that I need to rape this woman right now because she's wearing a bikini. The only way I can prevent myself from having sex with her is if she wraps herself from head to toe. And you know what I'm saying? You know, when I see, you know, seeing a lot of the Islam, you know what I'm saying? I see the moderate forms of that, in which there's a few Islamics living around here. Well, they're black Islam and everything, and they wear their hair wrapped and stuff like that. They don't go the full detail. But I've seen a few of them that wear the full thing that only shows their face.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff, and it's like, well, that's, you know, I mean, to me that is so irrational, because to me you're saying I can't be myself and I can't be the person I want to be because this dude can't stop thinking about having sex with me.
Well, I think I've covered this in a past show, maybe a few shows ago, where I was talking about there are clerics in Saudi Arabia specifically, but in other Muslim communities as well, that are debating whether or not women's eyes should be covered. And this would solve two of their problems, being turned on by women with beautiful eyes and the whole women wanting to drive issue that they're so up in armor against. There are some clerics saying that women should go out with gloves, because if a woman has beautiful hands and she talks with her hands, that might turn you on. Women should not be allowed to wear heels, because if you hear the sound of her heels, you might imagine her legs, and that might turn you on. You know, things like that. And it's like, where does it end? When you sexualize anyone, man or woman, to this extreme, you know, it's always going to be an issue for you. And in American culture, even as puritanical and hypocritical as it can be, we can see naked people or half-dressed people on the television all the time. And whether people want to admit it or not, more than sexualizing people, what that does is it desensitizes the viewer. You know, for instance, there are people that get addicted to porn. But there are even more people that watch so much porn that they become desensitized to the naked body. This is actually much, much more common than, you know, the idea of becoming addicted to porn. The reality that a man or a woman will watch so much porn that they will be completely desensitized to seeing the human body naked. And when you're dealing with a culture where many people don't see, you know, even a person's bare forearm until their marriage night, and meanwhile, your body's been flooded with hormones, you're curious about the opposite sex or the same sex, and you never really get to quench that visual curiosity, of course it's sad, but it's also very natural that if and when you should see that visual curiosity should be abated, there's going to be a rampant sexual curiosity that can't be abated because of years of oppression.
Right. Right. You know, kind of funny. I saw A Thousand Ways to Die, in which this couple, it was both of their first time.
I think I saw that.
And so they had, the first time they had sex, they both had heart attacks and died,
which is hilarious. Yeah, I remember the show said they'd been married for a couple of years, but they had such extreme anxiety that every time they tried to have sex, like, just, you know, just taking off an article of clothing would be enough to throw them into some serious anxiety attacks. So after a couple of years of being married, they finally got down to the deed, and it just was too much to bear, and they died, you know, during coitus. I mean, there are worse ways to go, I guess, but, you know, damn. You know, you're talking about two healthy young people, you know, who would die this way. It's pretty sad, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I even went so far as to, because when I run into people, I see people who will say something, you know what I'm saying, who will begin to, you know what I'm saying, they try to have different aspects of different beliefs, and it's almost like they create their own little pseudo-religion, because, you know, I'll be debating with someone, and they'll say, well, to me, this is God. And then they may not even name a being or a masculine figure as God, but they'll say, like, the universe is God, the Big Bang is God, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? This is God to me.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I had a theist who told me, well, I said, well, where is God? Why can't we see him? Well, we see God every day. We see him in the face of a child. We see him in the flower.
Right. Yeah, I'm like, you know what I'm saying? How the hell do you just do that shit? How do you just make up the best way to do it,
to be honest? I mean, I can say that apples are oranges to me. I can say anything means anything to me. Because, and this is where you have the whole charade of personal relationship with God. When you say something is personal, any personal relationship is not based on how two people interact, but how each of them perceive their interactions with one another. It's all about perception. So when you say something like that, I mean, and honestly, what's more personal than the relationship that's in your own mind? Let's be honest. The relationship that you have with yourself, you know, the voice you hear in your heart or in your head of God talking directly to you, not tangibly the way that I am talking to you right now, the voice that, you know, the love that you can only feel in your own heart, that cannot be really tangibly experienced through actions or words. What is more personal than that? Because the human mind is so complex that we can create entire worlds for ourselves. This is why fiction exists. This is why movies exist. This is why songs exist. All of these are someone's brainchild of perceptions of a relationship they had with others or with themselves. Worlds that they created out of their own imagination. And this is what religion is, a really bad story out of someone's imagination that when perceived by others, has been reinterpreted based on their own experiences and their own imagination and whatever they have to tell themselves to keep it real for themselves.
Right. you know, and to me, when I said this, I told this person, you know, saying that, you know, after they told me, well, to me, this is God, I'm like, congratulations, you just created another denomination.
Mm-hmm.
Because anytime you say that, well, I'm going to interpret this as this, you've created another denomination. You create your own little religion. You know what I'm saying? I even, you know people who, you know, have decided to divorce themselves from the idea of organized religion and only believe in the concept of God. I even know people who go further in just truly just follow astronomy. They only
mm-hmm.
believe in, you know, saying that and everything like that. And I asked them, how can you say that religion is BS, but astronomy is true? You know what I'm saying?
Even
you
astrology?
Know, yeah, same. That's what I meant. Astrology, yeah. You know, so, you know, like, how do you say that religion is bullshit, but astrology is true? You know what I'm saying? What makes one more valid than the other? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
and
what makes anything valid is how it enhances your life. Now, the average theist will tell you, without God, I am nothing. Some of the more lukewarm ones will say, well, without God, what is the purpose of life? God, knowing that God has got my back, God is looking out for me, is how I make it through the day. That's how I have any confidence in life. And so if that relationship can keep that person, you know, steady, keep them calm, keep them being an active, functional citizen of society, then that's what they need. And the fact of the matter, this is how most people, except maybe the clinically depressed, operate. We will experience things in life, and we will gather up that which makes us feel better about life and our own existence and toss away that which does not. And this is another reason why really turning your back on religion and admitting that there's no God and becoming an atheist can be so traumatic for some people, because you have to admit that there's only the tangible. There's only what's in this world. There isn't a guy in the sky who has your back. You not only are, especially in the case of black atheists, committing social suicide, but you're also removing something that for a lot of ex-theists used to feel really good.
Hmm.
And it's in our nature to grasp things that feel good to us.
Right. Right. You know, All right then. Well, you know, when you factor in a lot of this stuff, you know, especially in everything you're saying, you know, it's almost like no matter what we do or say, we believe in, you know, we have this atheism thing going on, and we don't, we're trying to promote the whole idea of, you know, saying, not only secular belief, secular activities and stuff like that, and even go so far as to, you know, create secular political parties and stuff like that. But we're trying to, you know, we're trying to push for a more inclusive, single religion dominated society and everything like that. But we have to face reality that, you know, there's one way or another there's going to be something that people are going to believe in. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
there's nothing you can do about that.
I came to that realization a long time ago, and again, it's probably because of my history and the fact that, like I said, I was very devout. I understand
mm-hmm.
the benefits of belief. You know, my sense of religion was not tainted by a bad experience with, you know, the officials at my church or anything like that. It wasn't tainted by being a member of a very conservative, very orthodox, or very fundamental religious community. So I got to see some of the very best aspects of religion. Some of the friends I still have in my life right now are people that I met in church.
Right.
So when you're a member of a community like that, and that's a key word here, community, and that's why people always want to join, believe in, or belong to something, because
mm-hmm.
we have that instinctual need to commune with, congregate with, be in the presence of other human beings. That's why there's always going to be something. Now, I don't know if that something will always be a belief, but if we can get to that point where we can we can open people's eyes to the fact that our planet is in danger. Our species has grown too comfortable with civilization. We are the slowest, we are the weakest, and we need science if we are going to keep progressing as a species. If we can get people to that point where they see that religion is not only holding us back, but maybe pushing us further back from where we should be, and have people come together for the advancement of science, the advancement of intellect, the sharing of knowledge, the search for more knowledge, and we can get people centered around that instead of false ideologies, it really wouldn't bother me. I think it'd be a very positive thing if we can get people to center their efforts around the concrete.
You know, it's interesting that you said that, too, because I recently was in a debate in which, and I guess this falls into another idea of society as well, and, you know, it's in the effects of thousands of years of religious male dominance on the world and societies around the world, stuff like that. But we got to discussing the women on the front lines situation and everything. And these women, they're religious. They believe that a man should protect a woman. And so they, you know what I'm saying, a lot of that, and a lot of them posted a few scriptures that I don't remember verbatim. And they even brought up, you know, a woman's physiology and her, you know what I'm saying, emotional. And, I mean, these are their beliefs. I don't adhere to them, but talking about how a woman can't handle this, and then she has a period and stuff like that. And then women in war are more likely to be raped and stuff. And even after I posted the statistics of women being raped in America without being in war, and how many societies had warrior women, how many queens, you know what I'm saying, it's a lot, some American and Egyptian and stuff like that, led their countries into war and won. And, you know, they still held on to this idea that this is for a man to do. It never mind the fact that women have already been serving, you know what I'm saying, in combat roles in the American military anyway. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, it's not, you know, you have women fighter pilots firing multi-million dollar high-speed supersonic jets that can bomb your shit into out of existence and stuff like that. But when we come to this, now all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying, that's when the male dominance and religion kicks back into overdrive, and these women would rather be in the kitchen cooking than, you know what I'm saying, understanding why some women don't want to be in the kitchen cooking.
I have a question. Are these black women?
Yeah, they were.
See, I didn't want to make this a color issue, but these will be the same women that will turn around and say, you know, I'm independent. I don't, a man beating on his wife is wrong. I'm not going to take orders from a man. A marriage is an equal partnership. The Bible doesn't say that. The Bible says that a man can be his wife if he wants to. Marriage is not an equal partnership. He controls you. He controls the household. You know, it's one of those, I will take some, I will leave some, whatever is beneficial to me. The fact of the matter is, these particular women don't want to go to war, so they're using the Bible as an excuse for why all women shouldn't go to war, and they will throw away the parts of the Bible where a woman is treated like a second-class citizen within a marriage or a relationship. It's the same as the pro-lifers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, God says you shouldn't abort, blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, you know, a lot of these women are talking from the pulpits, and the Bible says that a woman needs to hold her tongue in church. Her husband will speak for her. And if she doesn't have a husband to speak for her, she's just not speaking, period.
Mm.
You know, the cherry picking has a very illustrious history, especially in Christianity, more so than I've seen in any of the other major religions. the cherry picking is like it's to an extreme level, where you have people that shouldn't be defending the Bible who are, and the only reason they can is through cherry picking. You have black Christians. I mean, did you forget about slavery and how the Bible condones slavery? You have my favorite group, gay Christians, because, you know, while they're telling you all the time that your lifestyle is wrong, the Bible says who they are as a person is wrong.
Exactly.
You know, you have the rich Christians, who, even though the Bible says that it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You, especially the pastors and preachers who are fans of the prosperity gospel, a.k.a. the biggest scam ever, who come to church in a new silk suit every day, have a new car every year. Meanwhile, they say that the servants of God should be humble and not have any possessions, and that you need to put away all possessions in order to follow God. You know, it's one of those situations where there would be more denominations than there already are if these people with their own personal relationships with God weren't too lazy to create them. The new denomination springs up not just when someone has a new idea on how Christianity should be practiced, but when they have the foresight, the time, the motivation, most of the time financially tied, to actually create a new denomination. Because you have tons of people in church, you know, mega churches that have 55,000 congregants, and you'll have, you know, people at least, let's say, I'm going to assume each family worships the same, at least 29,000 different viewpoints on how a real Christian should behave. The only difference is they're not going out there and making their own church. That's the only difference. I mean,
you
have former rapper Mace, who has his own church, where they are worshiping, I believe it's Elohim. It is, who's like one of the original names for God. You know, it's like, I've seen this so many times. You have MC Hammer, too, which, to his credit, he was a reverend before this. But you have so many ex-rappers who've now found God. 50 Cent wrote a book about how it's wrong to masturbate. Mace became a preacher. Reverend Run is a reverend. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, after all the music and the drugs and the groupies, I'm going to give my life to God with the added bonus of scamming you further. Before, at least you were getting good music out of it. Now, you're going to get God out of it.
You see, and that goes back into an irrational belief and everything, is that these rappers, and for the record, Mace was a rapper in quotes, okay?
Yeah.
Quotes around rapper were referring to Mace. Okay? You know, you got, you know what I'm saying, him, Play from Kid and Play, I don't know the dude's real name, he's Play. You mentioned Reverend Ron and a few others. They after the whole shebang stopped.
Oh, DMX
the whole turn
to God now too.
Yeah, that is a hilarious story in and of itself. You know, all these guys, all these rappers, you know what I'm saying, aside, and especially the R&B, especially when your career goes downhill, you know what I'm saying? I guess that's the only thing you have left to do. So like that, flash forward, you contrast that with rock society, and with you got Tommy Lee and Axl Rose and, you know what I'm saying, Guns N' Roses and, you know what I'm saying, Rolling Stones. You don't see any of those people, you know what I'm saying, any people in the rock community going like, okay, my career is over, my life is shit, I guess I'm going to devote my life to God now and start a congregation and stuff like that. And it goes back to the whole irrational beliefs, you know what I'm saying, especially within the black community, and I'm not saying the irrational beliefs are inherent to the black community. I'm just
sadly,
saying this is
the two things that black people love the most are music and Jesus.
Right. So, you know, it makes it even more hilarious when I see a picture of Klansmen with crosses and preaching the Bible, and this is the same religion you're telling me I need to believe in. You're worshiping the same belief as people who absolutely hate you simply because you're black. And their ancestors are the one who brought you over here.
But Mario, so, they just weren't worshiping correctly. They had the Bible skewed. They had the Bible skewed. They were focusing on a message of hate. We're focusing on a message of love. Do you see how I can rationalize this any way I want? And the fact of the matter is, when you have a book as voluminous and contradictory as the Bible, you could say whatever you want it to say.
Right.
I can find a verse, maybe even a whole passage in the Bible, to support whatever I want.
Oh, yeah, you sure can. Apparently, there's one in there about car repair, too. I don't even know
what?
How you... That's what the woman told me. I mean, any problem you have, you know what I'm saying, even car repair, there's a scripture in the Bible for it. And I'm like, but they didn't even have... You
I'm
know
pretty
what?
Sure
I'm
I've never
even
saw the word car in the Bible.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I guess if you can have a donkey talk to a dude, you can... You know, and... This is the one thing I even put forth with somebody is like, what if a lot of these guys were on acid or some form of ancient hallucinogen when they wrote this shit down, and it became way more important and relevant than it ever was supposed to be? Like the
well,
burning bush.
Well, what else
bush,
are 13
that,
going to do together in the woods besides get high
right.
and maybe do other sexually related stuff?
Like, you know what I'm saying, like the burning, exactly, the burning bush, that guy was probably high on some serious shit when he saw that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, you know, that's got to be, I mean, why do we take it for, another thing about irrational beliefs, is 9 out of 10 of these irrational beliefs are from ancient societies or ancient peoples, and we believe that none of those people thought that, hey, this would be hilarious, man. Just write this shit down. Trust me, somebody's going to believe it.
Well, this is what I tried to make to a fellow believer is the Bible says, besides a couple of anonymous books, who wrote it? You are believing this person when they say that they were inspired by God. That is not faith in God. That is faith in man because God never came down and told anyone the Bible is true. Even the people
right.
who say they feel Jesus have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ can't say that God ever told them that the word, every word of the Bible is inspired by him. And the fact that any God, any perfect God, would need his rules and regulations and the stories of his son written down and transcribed by an imperfect being with an even more imperfect way of spreading stories, of editing, of printing, to get the word out there, is just completely ludicrous.
Right. Yeah, you know, and so, when I run to people, you know, especially on Facebook, you know, and this, because apparently Facebook is the world now, you know what I'm saying? You know, Facebook is where things is happening. And you know everybody on Facebook. You don't have to leave the comfort of your house to have a conversation with people anymore. You know, and so I seem to have a knack for finding myself in ridiculous debate. And like I was trying to mention about, you know, black nationalists earlier and stuff like that, is I invariably end up in conversations with these people, and you know. I haven't met one of those, one black nationalist that I felt like I would really like to hang out with this guy. You know what I'm saying? I always find that one guy who is so racist and so homophobic that this guy deserves his own BBC documentary. I mean, seriously, this guy really needs to be on television so everybody can see these people really believe that they are superior to other people because of some shit called melanin and everything. And
living in South Florida, I have not had the pleasure of meeting a black nationalist yet. At least none that I knew was a black nationalist. Like they don't travel in packs here. At least none that I've run into. I have met the occasional Rasta who was like, yes, I follow the religion of Jah. And, you know, you can't date white guys because they're pigs and the bleached skin and you're better than that. And blah, blah. I have never met a black nationalist, however. I guess it would fall into the mode because every Rasta I've met was very against interracial relationships and very against homosexuals.
Yeah, that's definitely against homosexuals and interracial relationships, stuff like that. That right there is, you know, I can't believe that, you know, I just don't understand that. I mean, you know, people believing that, you know, races shouldn't mix, you know, especially when you come to somebody who does actually believe in God. I'm like, well, if you believe in God, do you mean believe that we all started from two people anyway? So why does it matter we mix now? We were already mixed before.
There's actually a man. I remember he used to be at the bus stop where I would take the bus when I was a freshman in high school, and he would like actually preach about this every day. I'm going to tell you some things he used to say. He would say things like, you know, when you mix one breed of dog with another, you sometimes get a breed that is more ugly, hostile, aggressive than either of the parent breeds. He would say things like, when you mix races, I mean, there are certain races that are genetically predisposed to certain immunities and certain illnesses. And when you mix races, you're just creating sicker people. He would say things like, you know, when you are looking at a person who is clearly racially mixed, that person is racially indeterminate. They don't belong to either race. They are a race of their own. You're going to give... mixed children have identity issues. Sadly enough, while this is true, I firmly believe this is a byproduct of people putting so much importance on race, is why so many mixed people have identity issues. I mean, it's not like they're less human or they're unintelligent or something like that. But, you know, when you have one side, especially people who are part black get this a lot, where they are almost bullied into claiming that they are black, you know, dismissing any Asian or European parentage. You know, you can't say I'm biracial to a lot of black people. It's like, it's almost like it's offensive to them that you don't just claim to be black, even if you're more than that. And that's why I think that identity issues come in. I think that has to do with racial purists always demanding that you be one or the other.
Right. Wow. I mean, you know, especially when you meet somebody who is light-skinned or is clearly multiracial, and they're so staunchly against interracial dating. I'm like, so you're completely against the very mechanism that created your dumbass.
Yeah. Pretty much. You know, and I tell people that too. A lot of these people will be the same ones that have, like, that believe they already have it in their heads what a white person, what an Asian person, what a European person should look like. But not all black people look the same, not even those on the African continent. They're going to look different based on where in Africa you are, what region, what country. There are clear differences. The people in Cameroon do not look like the people in Ethiopia. They do not look like the people in Kenya. They don't look like the people in Botswana. And, you know, these people will say things like, well, black women have big hips and big butts and you know, we're sturdy and we're stocky. Somalians don't look like that. Ethiopians don't look like that. They're tall and lanky. You know, they'll say things like, oh, you know, being the tall, skinny, that's something that only European women have. I've seen German women. They are far from tall and lanky. Even the ones that are lanky are, you know, they're still stockier than the average white American woman, for example. Really sturdy-looking women. Scandinavian women are, like, you know, really, really sturdy, stocky-looking, you know, women. The kind of woman that looks like she could, like, wield an axe really, really well. You know, it's one of those things where people not only got into their minds that races should be separate, but they also got into their heads that each race should look like fill in the blank.
Right, right.
And when you don't meet that criteria, there's something wrong.
Right. And, you know, and it's amazing that you find that because, you know, if you know anything about history, then you've read about Genghis Khan, and about a third of the world's population can trace their, you know, same DNA back to Genghis Khan because that man was dropping seeds.
Yeah, and more than half of Mongolians are actually direct descendants of Genghis Khan. So
right.
It's actually a case where when you say all Asians look alike, maybe not all Asians look alike, but if a person were to say all Mongolians look alike, they could very well be a situation where all the Mongolians they were seeing did look alike because they have that common ancestor.
And, I mean, just imagine. I mean, that, of course, then again, he wiped out about 40 or 50 million people by itself, you know. So, I guess a trade-off, you know.
Well, he sowed his wild oats. He was fruitful and multiplied like the Bible said you should.
That is hilarious, though.
You can't get more fruitful than that. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, that dude was dropping some seeds, man. I mean, I find that just hilarious, man, you know. But, when I get back into thinking about how I clearly dodged a bullet, when I see, you know, the irrationality of it, I mean, because there were so many ways I could have gone. Like my grandmother started off as Baptist, and then she became a Jehovah's Witness. My friend was a Baptist, but then he was non-denominational. I met some Catholics. I even run into some, like I said, black nationalists, Muslims, and stuff like that. I even know a few people who are Hebrew, and I mean, they swear they're the
black Israelites.
Yeah.
Are the best. So funny. I've met a few of those.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you can't help but find some type of humor in all that, you know. But I realized there were so many times in which I could have ended up a part of this irrational bullshit, and I would have found myself, you know, lost in this community of people who really do not believe, who really, you know, I mean, there are good people in any community, but the core of their beliefs and what they hold to, you know what I'm saying? I know a lot of good, funny-ass, really cool-ass Christians on Facebook who say that I disagree with homosexuality. How you disagree with something that's not really even a part of you, you know what I'm saying? It's
mm-hmm.
not something like, well, I disagree with going to space. I disagree with taxes. No, you know what I'm saying? You disagree with somebody saying, hey, for me, this dude here works for me and my life. I would like to be happy with this dude. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you're supposed to look at and like, well, I don't think you should be doing it because in my belief system, I'm queasy about people being happy doing shit that I'm not going to do. You know, sometimes it really disgusts me. And you'll meet a lot of people who are really good people. Who will probably never ever give you a reason to think they're not good people. But then there'll be a subject, either it's homosexuality or political ideas or something like that. And that's when you see the irrationality, you see the BS that just rears its ugly head out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, you know what I'm saying, this, you know, it's, I mean, I guess they're human.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that's part of it, too. Like, no matter how moderate or seemingly rational Christian is, if they're still clinging to that title, they're still clinging to the at least some of the ideologies in their scripture, which are irrational.
Right. You know, the problem, you know, it's just like insanity, someone who is irrational doesn't realize they're irrational. To them, they're perfectly rational. All this makes complete sense. damn. You know what I'm saying?
It's harder to realize that you're being irrational when there are people around you who think like you. And will not only condone but encourage your irrationality. So it's one thing when you're just irrational on your own. It's another thing altogether when someone sees you being irrational and be like, yeah, totally, go for it.
Right. And just make note of this. We're about 10 minutes left on the show. So if there is anyone who wants to call in and make a comment, go and call in the number 310-982-4273 and press 1. We'll beep you in. I'm going to cut it about 5 minutes early so I can take the show out with my boy Williams, Allie Kane, Father Teresa, Doug, Smith, Homer, and any other names you might have. You know what I'm saying?
That's
I
want to
play that
now.
Song again. Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? A man of 1,000 faces, or like one face and 1,000 names, one or the other. And yeah, but I want to play his that song again when we go out because that's a nice jam and whatnot. So I just lost my damn train of thought.
Callers, please call in if you would like to speak with us.
Yeah, do that shit. All right. Oh yeah, this being February 1st, it's supposedly Black History Month and whatnot. I to touch on this real quick and everything. I'm kind of on the fence about the whole Black History Month thing because I think it's kind of funny. Like, you know, say, hey, you got this month to learn about Black history. I think that American history, world history is history. Teach the shit year round, period. You know what I'm saying? You know, I love
my
history.
Biggest
so
gripe
I'm
with,
not,
my biggest gripe with U.S. history is that I feel that the history of African Americans needs to be taught in the school systems in this country year long. It's almost
right.
As if it's relocated to this one month because our government doesn't want to teach, the about the African Americans who made an impact on U.S. history all year long. To do so
right.
might actually alleviate racial tensions, and
right.
But giving Black people their own separate month. All it does is reduce the amount of time that the school children should be learning about Black history, and it singles it out as something negative.
Yeah, you know, the way I kind of look at it like that because I love history in general, period. You know what I'm saying? I even see how, you know, saying around October or November is Native American Heritage Month, and nobody really even makes mention of that. There's also Hispanic Month. Nobody really
There's
says
Asian
anything
Heritage
about that.
Month too.
Yeah, and it's like you got all these different factions. America wasn't just made by white and Black people. It was
not
made
according
by
to
different
the History
races.
Channel. According to the History Channel, have you seen the show The Men Who Built America? It barely grazes on the Hispanic immigrants, the Native Americans, those who were slaves and those who were not, the African slaves, and the Asian immigrants who built this country from the ground up. As far as that would lead you to believe, anything and everything of note done in this country was done by a white person of European
ancestry. Yeah, because I saw the episode when it was talking about Rockefeller or Vanderbilt One who came up with the idea for the Transcontinental Railroad. I'm like, why did you mention the Asian Americans who helped build that damn railroad, though? I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? That it wouldn't have been. You didn't build that railroad was not built by, you know what I'm saying, you know, white America. It was, maybe the idea was created by a white man, but the actual physical labor was done by, you know what I'm saying, Africans and, you know, saying Asian Americans. So it was done by minorities, basically. You know what I'm saying? You know, any idea that was come up with, especially in those times.
Well, I mean, you have school systems, notably Texas, who wants to take slavery out of the school books. Or at least the more unsavory aspects of slavery. They're watering down the history of minorities in this country to the point where in another few decades, they may not be in the history books at all.
That's bullshit. I mean, because, you know, if you want to teach American history, you want people to be you know, want to know about the country, you can need to teach the ugly shit too. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I cannot have – that's one of the reasons why I can't count myself as a patriot, because I don't look at myself as saying, oh, well, America is this great, wonderful place. No, America has a lot of ugly shit, too. And the fact that Americans are so quick to point out some of the country's ugly stuff shows the fact that they really, really like to ignore the ugly side of what America is and what created America, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying I'm not happy to be here, because I could have been born in a much worse country dealing with much worse situations. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not finna sit here and act like these things didn't happen. I'm not going to act like slavery didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to act like Native Americans were nearly genocided out of their own country. Genocided is a word. I made it up, but it's still a word.
I was
about
to point that out, but I thought I'd let it ride.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to act like the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, you know what I'm saying, did
not happen. Internment camps,
you know?
That's a cute way of saying concentration camps. But
right, exactly.
They didn't
you know
have crematoriums, but yeah, I mean, they had just about everything else. I mean, when you concentrate a group of people in a place, it's a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, you know, yeah, because those people, I mean, a lot of those people lost everything, man. You know, George Takei, I think him or his family won. I can't remember exactly how he said it, but he talked about it on his Facebook page, and you know how his family were displaced by that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We got a call on the line, and we only have a few minutes left, so.
Take him.
I don't know how to pronounce this. Is it Sitawayo 1 or something? Hello? Hello, caller?
Hello?
Or did
Hello?
You just want to listen? I guess I just want to listen. Well, if you want to talk, just press 1 again. Yeah, you know, you can't act like this stuff didn't happen. You can't act like this history isn't there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's all over. You know what I'm saying? First of all, to ignore slavery existed is to ignore that, is to imagine that black people just spring up out of the ground and just appeared here. You know what I'm saying? Schools are still teaching that Christopher Columbus founded America when the son bitch didn't.
Well, I mean, how do you discover a place where millions of people were already living? That's like someone walking into my front door and saying they discovered my house.
All
he did was exploit the people, rape tons and tons of women, and, you know, leave the lands wide open for other European exploiters. And this is what happened. You know, without Haiti, there would not have been the colonization of the Americas and the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
He made this... He created the foundation for these countries as we know them. He did not discover anything or benefit the native peoples in any way.
Right. Yeah, it didn't. You know what I'm saying? It didn't. As a matter of fact,
and then we gave this guy a holiday.
Right. It gave the guy a holiday. You know what I'm saying? That's the funny thing about it. We all already have evidence that the Vikings landed on America centuries before Columbus, and we're just like, okay, well, we can't have a Viking Day, you know, doesn't sound right. How are we going to sell furniture on a Viking Day? Let's call it Columbus Day.
We can't celebrate the Vikings because the Vikings didn't exploit and pillage the land. You have to give props to the person who did that.
Right. You know what I'm saying? The Vikings are so much cooler than Columbus because they have those helmets with the horns on them, and Vikings are insane, large, white guys with beards. I mean,
and Eric from True Blood was a Viking, so that makes him so much better.
No kidding.
Yeah, he was a Viking when he was human.
I did not know that.
You seriously
need
to catch up on True Blood then.
I tried to watch that show, but then it started getting like, you know, it's like, God dang, it's sure a lot of supernatural beings in this one little town, you know?
Speaking of irrational beliefs, if watching True Blood is wrong, then I don't want to be right.
Well, I'm the same way about Spartacus and Game of Thrones, which I'm going to have to remind you people that I'm putting that right now Spartacus is on and I'm missing it so I can talk to y'all. So, you know what I'm saying?
Ditto.
That just counts a feather in my cap right there.
That's how much we
I'm
love you.
People. Exactly.
We are missing gladiator pillage and revenge against the Romans for you.
Right. Exactly. As a matter of fact, you know, I might even start wearing a cross since, you know, the slave rebellion, you know what I'm saying? I mean, this is history, so it's not a spoiler. You know what I'm saying? It was crushed by Rome, and 6,000 of Spartacus's army were nailed to a cross along the Appian Way. So an atheist can wear a cross in symbol of the fight against slavery, I guess. Because, you know, 6,000 people crucified on the cross, and, you know, still wear a cross, you know what I'm saying? I might go so far as
to
wear a guillotine.
I think it's easy to forget for a lot of people, even atheists sometimes, that Jesus was not the only person to ever be crucified. He wasn't the first. He wasn't the last. He wasn't the only one crucified at that time. There were two guys right next to him.
Yeah.
He didn't come back in 3 days either, FYI.
I just think it's really kind of jacked up that the logo for your religion is a symbol of torture and death. And it's like me walking around with a guillotine on my neck, which would probably be pretty cool.
I wonder if Jesus had lived like 30 years ago and had been executed in Texas, if Christians would be wearing little electric chairs around their necks.
That'd be cool, too. That'd be cool, too. Well. But I guess that's going to wrap up this show, then. We're in the last few minutes left, and I want to take it out with the Man of a Thousand Names and One Face, Ali Kane's song and whatnot, because it's a pretty dope song. Be sure to catch Kim. She'll be back doing her show Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And everything. I believe that Raina's RSS show should be back on tomorrow, if not next Saturday. And we'll be back on the following Friday after next. Yeah, something like
that.
Yeah, six.
That would
like
be
that.
The 15th.
Yeah. And Alfred and Ali Kane will be back, or William, or whatever. Yeah, I, one way or another. Yeah, the barbershop. We'll be back on next week. I believe that's Tuesday or Wednesday at 8. I think it's Tuesday at 8 p.m. I believe so. So, without further ado, we're going to take it out
everyone.
With the Black Freethinker song. Y'all be safe. Have a good weekend.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. Free thoughts, we don't walk by faith in the lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth is not pulled from a text, show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire his lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday, I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family and all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah, this is the challenge to think for yourself. Break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through. A venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. Where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. We don't walk by faith, and I lost my state because it's not quite safe.